Okay, let's start. Welcome to the Patreon Q&A for the month of November 2022. We have these every month, even when there is no stream, like this month. This is your opportunity to kind of have a more one-on-one conversation, ask your questions. Yeah, just a little bonus thing.
Be insulted.
Yep.
Nah.
Oh, nah. If that's what they want, you know. Whatever they pay for, we gotta keep the customer happy.
That's true. If you want me to. Please be explicit in your question if you'd like me to insult you.
Alrighty. As usual, how it works is you make a request to speak on Discord in the stage, and then you will be allowed to jump on in the order that your request came in. You can also just meme in the voice chat. That's how it usually goes anyway. As far as developments, we had a patch somewhat recently, end of October, that had the illumination flares, the thermal resolution rework, and some other small stuff. That was a good patch, I think, or at least it seemed to go well.
Oh, yeah.
We've been working on a bunch of stuff since, obviously. We always are. One of those things is AI. In fact, I have to test the latest milestone of that to probably today. AI is an ongoing thing, so it's not like we fixed AI and it's done, but a bunch of stuff that we wanted to change has been changed, which is nice. We'll see if it did the trick. There'll always be more stuff to do. We're aware of all the stuff that the game needs, of course, like AI fixes and optimization stuff, and we get to all of them as we can, so this is one little piece in that journey. M47 Dragon, how's it going?
Going well. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad.
Pretty good.
Excellent. Actually, I do have a general question about AI. I just kind of wanted to know what your plans for it are in the near future. Like, what are the concrete things you're trying to improve about it?
So there's some low-level maneuvering stuff that we've been fixing. In fact, let me pull up the list and give examples. It's basically, like, there's a few different kinds of AI that we want to improve. One being the actual maneuvering of individual units, and then the other being like tactical awareness and larger decision-making for each force. And some of that comes down to how the missions are designed. Like, if the mission designer says that this platoon drives over here, then that's what they do. But things like how information is passed around and how spotting reports make it back up the chain and units become aware of them, that can kind of improve that awareness overall.
I think that's one of my favorite parts. I don't know if you've ever played the combat mission games, how information gets processed from, like, you know, platoon one of company A to platoon two of company C. It has to go up the chain, be communicated through different channels, and then go back down before they actually realize what's going on. I think that's a really cool part that a lot of games don't really model or try to model.
Yeah, it definitely requires its own systems to be developed. It's something we've had in mind for a while. It's just only now we're starting to look into it because of all the other stuff we had to do. Okay, so for example, this current set has things like letting units switch ammo because they're aware of, like, what ammo is best for what target, because the voice system uses it, but the AI wasn't able to use that yet. Letting units do very basic reporting, like among the platoon, letting the platoon mates know what's going on, noticing that their friendlies are dying nearby and investigating, turning the hull toward the enemy when they're stopped, reversing if their objective is behind them but they have a threat in front, a bunch of things like that, just smaller level behaviors that make them look less lost.
Right. All right, cool. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have Eteocles. I can never remember how to say this one properly.
Eteocles. Who is right? Oh, he's deaf.
He's mute. His mic is not muted or not working.
He just came in here to troll us then.
All right.
I came here to ask about Multicrew.
For some
reason, my push to talk didn't work. It's weird. I had to resolve from push to talk to voice activation that I could talk here.
Got it. All right. What's your question?
Multicrew, when?
When it's ready.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Next question. Multicrew and multiplayer. We have had people working with us in the past on that. At this point now, I am going to be taking the reins of that, and I want to be getting some tests, internal tests ready. I want to say before the end of this year, but just to give you an idea of like where we're generally at. But for right now, that's kind of the thing. I don't want to overpromise anything.
Internal test before the end of the year, or some sort of public test before the end of the year.
Internal.
Yeah, not public.
Yep.
At least we
heard that you're working on it, and yeah, I mean, for me, I'm honestly not even playing the game until this is in, and I have a lot of people who won't even buy it until it's in, and yeah.
It's been a very popular request. But because we're a small team, and now we're like, okay, now one of us can just kind of focus on that. That's great news.
That's something we didn't know before, so thank you for sharing that.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure thanks for your question. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that people are waiting for, if we had to, like, poll everybody. Because we have, like, what, over 100,000 people with the game wishlisted who just haven't bought it and they're waiting to see something. I'm pretty sure one of the most popular things that they'd be waiting for is multiplayer. So
I have read tons of times in the Steam Discord forums and in other Discords, or the Steam forums and in other Discords. They all just blend together at a certain point.
Wait, you read the Steam forums? What about your sanity, my dude?
I am pain. No, but I've read a lot of times that this is a very popular and requested feature. I want it to be good, and when we have more information for people, cast patrons will probably see us developing that.
Yeah. That's true. Zenbot, you're on.
Yeah, hello.
Hey.
Howdy.
I hope you guys are having a great day today. I just wanted to know what the possibility is there of, like, adding other countries into the game, like Sweden or France or something.
It's definitely possible in the far future. Right now we're working on a specific place and time, and there's only going to be four countries, which is US, USSR, East Germany, West Germany. Because that's based on who was stationed around the Fulda area, the CENTAG area of operations, as NATO called it. So after that, obviously the game can be expanded to all kinds of things, because it's, anywhere that tanks go. So we could look into other things at that point.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Josh, when is Malta really going to come in as a playable faction?
When Malta, that's what I want to know. Even one tank, we can think about it.
They have one. They had one tank.
What kind of tank did Malta have?
We should answer the next question.
Okay. Sydney, flap your on.
Hello.
Hey.
So last patron Q&A was asked if the T-72s and anything with an autoloader actually simulated the spinning of the loader to vary load times. I was wondering if the Abrams does the same thing with sweet spots in the bustle rack.
You know, that's something that's been talked about every once in a while. Like, it comes up. It's certainly a thing that could be done, but it has not been done. Right now, the Abrams has a fixed reload time. In the old demo, there was variable reload time, but I've never done sweet spot modeling as far as, like, how far the loader has to reach or whatever. I'm not sure that it would be worth the effort, but maybe if I get really bored one day, it'll make it in. I don't know.
Fair enough. All right, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Scrimmy Bungo, you are on.
Hello. I guess it's like a two-part question, kind of like two parts of the same question. And maybe, like, to go back to what you were talking about before with the AI, is there any plans? Because, like, right now, like, when you get mission objectives in the campaign, it just pops up a text that is, at least for me, oftentimes being hidden by how long I'm reloading my shells for. So is there anything of, like, adding in, like, a command voice saying, hey, go here, do this? And then same thing with, like, your squad mates. You know, oftentimes the first thing that I hear to know that my squad has seen something is a gun shooting or getting blown up.
Yeah.
So is there any plans to add, like, that kind of, like, AI of, like, hey, there's something over by this house.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
Like,
so there's a few things going on for this. One is actually probably in the near future, as far as I'm aware, we're adding objectives that you can see, like, in the HUD. You can pop them up and look at what you're supposed to be doing and what you've accomplished. Just like, you know, video game style. You've probably seen them a million times, but we haven't had them yet. The other thing is we have a bunch of voice lines recorded that are not in yet for contact reports and things like that.
Mm.
And then there are more that we could make. We have the crew ones reported or recorded. And then we could also add lines from, like, HQ or whatever, because those aren't even the same actors. We can just throw those in whenever. So we have a bunch of stuff recorded. We just don't have any systems implemented for, you know, making those play on the radio, but it is something that we're planning on.
Okay, cool. And I guess the other, I just, the other half of that question is just German and Russian voice lines. when TM?
we've finished the script and we're looking at auditions right now, so it should happen soon. We're moving pretty slow on it because of the amount of stuff that we do. It kind of, like, it has to fill in between other jobs, but it is moving very slowly.
All right, cool.
Thank you. All right.
Mr. Sir Guy Person Man.
Hello.
Hey.
I wanted to say this comment about what you said earlier about possible multiplayer build tests in, like, later or like end of this year, which.
Right.
Since I'm a CAS tier member, that's going to be pretty sweet. Can't wait. I hope that it actually comes and isn't going to be like in January, but I know there's no promises. So.
Oh, hold on. Let's clarify. Internal doesn't mean sharing it around with people. That's like that's like me and Kavi shooting each other.
Oh, shame.
Yeah. Now, if it goes well, I would like to open that up, you know, into next year for CAS people and other folks, but we need to really nail that down. So this is going to be a good, like, technical underpinning kind of test.
Okay.
Yeah. There's the multiplayer stuff. The earliest form of multiplayer testing happened quite a while ago, but it wasn't a complete system. It was like we could drive around and see each other in the session and all that. And then the people that were working on multiplayer we're not able to keep working on it, so we kind of had to pause for a while, and now we're bringing it back in, but there's so much that's happened to the game in the meantime, we have to go and, like, reestablish some of that ground, so it's not like a fast thing.
Yeah, okay. some of the work that has been done has become just very stale at this point. And that doesn't mean it can't be reused, but generally it has a lot of crud with it that I wouldn't want to reincorporate back into the project. So now I have to start, not from scratch, but from a place where it's like, okay, let me take all these better, these examples that they had and finesse a better system with it.
Yeah, I understand. I also got two other questions. One being about how the process and progress on the unbutton and button system in Periscope views, how that's going.
Nothing specific to report. You've probably seen the early prototyping that we did with the animated crewman.
Yeah.
That is an early prototype, so we would still have to make like the real animations, and we still have to model the interior void thing. I think we have the periscopes made. I have to double check, but like there's a lot of pieces to that that need to get done, and then we'd have to actually, so for example, I'm working on redoing some fire control system stuff so that we can model certain vehicles properly in the future. So even though we have like some of the pieces ready for the unbuttoning feature, nobody's doing anything on it right now. It's like in the queue waiting for a future time block when someone's available. So that's just not moving at the moment. We have a lot of stuff. Like we work on only the ones that we can cover with people, and then the rest of them wait until we have time. So right now buttoning and unbuttoning is waiting.
Okay. And then my other question was kind of leading into what you were talking about with the fire control system on the progression on the emergency mode and manual mode for the Abrams.
Oh, yeah. So you've probably seen I was asking some questions to clarify that.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if we'll do every single detail. Like, it's probably not going to be Steel Beast still. But I wanted to see how all that stuff works specifically because I wanted to glean how the system works, like not just what it does but why, because that will inform how I write the kind of the new code for fire control system stuff. Basically I wanted to be able to recreate behaviors of a bunch of different kinds instead of having to make code that artificially does this. How do I explain this? If you design a code system close enough to the real thing, it will produce the same behaviors kind of on its own, because it'll become like a facsimile of the real one, and then stuff that you didn't necessarily plan will still happen correctly, like emergent behavior. And I don't need to nail it exactly like that, but the closer I get to a real fire control system architecture, better time I'll have making any individual feature happen. I won't have to work as hard to like shoehorn it into the code after the fact, which is what I was facing with some of the older stuff. So okay. All that long-winded stuff to say, like the explanations that I got about Abrams modes were very helpful, and I've created a plan for how to design this properly. The next time the fire control system code gets actually revised, it should come out much cleaner and much closer to reality so that we would be able to do things like emergency mode. I can't guarantee that every detail of the Abrams will be in there because that is still a lot of work to set it up, and we have all these other tanks, but it should be much more familiar for a crew who are used to, you know, what should happen when my ballistic computer gets taken out, what should happen when my laser rangefinder goes down, what do I see when I lose power. Like, it might match reality a little better after that's done.
Well, I think it would definitely help the people that like would play a tank or the Abrams that would just like they lose stabilization and stuff around those modules, and then they just go straight to manual, and it's like, oh well, now you could hear them cranking the crank to traverse the turret. But if you get the emergency mode in, I think it's going to be a somewhat noticeable difference for when you take a hit and you take some damage, you might be able to move the turret a lot better.
Yeah. I mean, there's other stuff involved too, like making the hit zones more granular. I think right now the optic hit zone covers both the GPS and the laser rangefinder. I don't think they're separated. And then the ballistic computer, I don't even know if that's split off. Like, it might the hunk of computer inside the turret might actually be the same hit zone as the doghouse at the moment. So it's, I'd have to go back and see. Like, the more separated that gets, the more different behaviors become possible. Right now, you lose your system, you're basically always going to go straight to manual mode just because of the way it's set up. So that would have to get changed as well. But if it does get changed, yeah, we could make those alternate modes, those in-between stages.
Well, that was all my questions for now. All right. So I'm going to head back to the stage.
Good talk.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to, once you've done those edits, it's not just going to be, here's a new feature, look in this 4,000 line code file so we can shove it in somewhere. It'll just be a more organic way to add features in the end.
Definitely the more components and modules to make up the system instead of like one master file.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's up, Sebek?
Oh, hello, everyone.
Howdy.
First question is, when we gonna get a infantry? Is it just around the corner, or we will need to wait a bit longer? And the second question is, what are you thinking about maybe some way of players suggesting the mission content, like maybe a patron perk when you can drop you some scenario and you can draw from those ideas to kind of use it to please the public a bit?
Mm-hmm. So for the first question, we currently have somebody on infantry. That's their main assigned task. They have completed, let's see, they have all the basic stuff and mounting, dismounting, taking objectives, but they're working on anti-tank right now, if I remember correctly. So that's, infantry is ongoing. It's not ready to show yet. We're just working on it, and it'll be ready when it's ready. Just like everything else, but it is a current item. It's not like we'll get to it, you know. It is a thing that's happening at the moment.
No, it's good.
By the way, I just noticed somebody said in voice chat, when is the barrel race happening? Yeah, part of the fire control system rework is gun uncouple will become possible. Anyway, the second question was about taking ideas, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ideas about missions. So you guys are always free to make suggestions, but in general, I think we don't usually solicit ideas because we already have so many ideas that we haven't even done yet. It's like, okay, we're out of all the things that we're short of for the project, ideas are not one of them. You can still post ideas, especially patrons. I guess this would apply mostly to just general feedback, but patrons, we have the patron GHPC channel specifically, so you get like a closer line of communication. You can still post stuff. We might not always respond. We always see it, though.
Yeah, it would also kind of feel weird if we put that into like a patron package to be like, you can give us ideas. There's no guarantee that we might use those ideas, or if we wrote it that in, we'd be like, yeah, some of these ideas are probably not in scope of what we're trying to do, like have 20 World War II tanks fight off an Abrams or something.
Oh no, I more think about the like kind of a convoy ambush or things like that, but I definitely will drop a few of my ideas into the feedback section in that case.
You can always feel free. Totally. We don't want to establish an expectation, because if we were to do that, if we were to say, okay, put your ideas here and we promise we'll look at them and we'll look at it, like, then we have to spend a lot of time responding, like saying thanks for the idea, we will or won't, whatever. And it works better for us if we can just read them as they come in and then just quietly say, oh neat, or you know, we won't do that, or you know, and still keep our focus on the actual development and necessary communication. Basically, the game's, it's big enough now and the community's big enough that we can't treat any specific thing as like requiring our input. That's why you see on the, sometimes on the Steam forums, you get a developer response on something. Like, one of us will come in and make an answer and mark it, but normally we don't. Like, it's pretty rare, all things considered, because we don't have the time. So,
I understand we'll that definitely. You better guys keep coding, you know.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Yep. Back to the code mines.
So, thank you guys.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Steggy.
Hello.
How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. I tried recording a video for the game this morning. It didn't work, so I'm going to try again tomorrow.
Very cool.
Thank you. Nice. So for my first question, what is the event that causes World War III in the GHBC timeline? And if so, will the player even know about it since they're like a boots-on-the-ground commander and, you know, in other World War III fiction like... Team Yankee and Charlie's Chieftains, the main characters who are tank commanders on the ground don't actually know what caused it. So is it going to be like stated somewhere, or is it going to be like, hey, we don't know, just enjoy the gameplay?
We have some ideas about that, but I don't want to get into them because, one, we might change our minds, and two, it's technically a spoiler.
Oh, I see. Ooh.
I personally, and I don't think this is going to spoil anything, I personally like the idea of not saying so much explicitly of what the thing is that happens, but trying to have people piece together that information through the battlefields themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Like environmental details, things like houses being looted to allude to, let's say for instance, the Soviet Union looting all stuff to like keep the economy afloat, that sort of stuff.
Oh yeah, you'd find stuff. Environmental storytelling we can do for like just about anything, like showing right. that evacuations happened or that whatever. Like as far as the actual cause, the starting point, I don't think we'd be able to establish that through environmental storytelling necessarily, but we could probably put in little clues like rumors or little asides, little one line right, things right. in the mission briefings, and then you say, hey, how did this happen?
Yeah.
Alrighty. Interesting. Okay, so for my second question, given how there are different types of tanks, will there also be different types of infantry for the same faction? Things like West Germany having like Panzer Grenadiers or reservists, Heimatschützen, that sort of thing.
Sort of. Right now, there's one infantry model per faction as far as like uniform and equipment go, but there are multiple mm-hmm. weapons available. Modeled. So as far as their jobs go, there will be different kinds, but they probably won't visually look different.
Yeah, understandable. Like, gotta use those assets where possible. Like, time is short and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, we make something that's representative, pretty close to universal, and then we go from there. Like, somebody saw an early teaser of the Soviet infantry, the Russians, and they mm-hmm. said something about I think the shoulder boards weren't right or something, and then the artist was like, yeah, I'm not changing that. we made a model that's generic and looks good enough, and there's no reason mm-hmm. to try to like micro detail it for specific things, because we're not gonna make a bunch of different kinds of infantry and all that. And it's like, hey, that's fair enough, we are making a game about tanks, and the infantry are just kind of there.
Yeah. They're like mostly support, and like, yeah, since you do play as mostly the tanks, and when infantry comes, you'll play as the APC dropping off the infantry and such. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite one was somebody pointing out that the flash hider on the M16s was the A2 type instead of the A1 or something like that. And that's... If someone's inspecting the bottom of the flash hider on the M16
on the battlefield,
in Gunner Heat PC, at that point, that's beyond our concerns.
Literally unplayable.
Yep.
Yeah, because like that's interesting, and that's one heck of a way to like get your priorities right. Since like there's obviously a timetable, there are multiple things in development at once, different team members working on different aspects of the game, that sort of stuff. And it's like good to like, hey, it's sim light. It's not going to be like Steel Beasts where, hey, everything's like down to the button and all that stuff. Like, the game's still immersive as heck. And I think infantry, no matter if like a single dot button on the shoulder pad is going to be different. Like, it's still going to add a lot of immersion and not really subtract any of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all right. Those are all the questions for now. Thank you for having me.
No problem.
Thank you.
Scrimmy Bungo, you're back on.
Hello, again.
I have a question for you before you ask your question. What is a Scrimmy Bungo?
It is a complete nonsense word that I thought sounded funny.
It sounds like like British slang.
Yeah.
It kind of does.
Like an idiom.
But it's just nonsense. It just made me laugh when I thought about it.
Like, if a cheeky Nando's is a real thing, then a Scrimmy Bungo surely.
All right, so I've got, again, kind of two similar related questions. One was, like, having watched the Chieftain, one of his latest videos, the Switchology for the T-72, he goes into a bit, and I don't remember exactly how it works, but, like, the rangefinder on the T-72 isn't, like, you have to set it to different settings to depending on how far you think something is, and it could return a bad result, like a clearly bad result, and you go, okay, I have to change it. And so, like, on vehicles with rangefinders, is how they work in real life taken into account, or does it just point array at the point and then return a value?
Right now it's just one ray cast, because that's the easiest way to make something work in a game engine. We could do multiple returns, and we've been thinking about it because there's some interesting stuff. For example, we were doing a research pass for the T-80 and the T-64B, because they use the same fire control system. And that fire control system has three lamps on the bottom of the gun sight that let you know if you're in first, middle, or last return mode. It actually has three. Abrams has first and last, if I remember correctly. So there's some details of these systems that only make sense if you simulate multiple returns. The problem is multiple returns would be, we'd have to do like a burst of laser ray casts, and then we have to make sure that we have the like the circle the right size, the dispersion. We have to make sure that we properly hit like tree leaves and stuff like that, which right now it passes right through. It always does last return. So there's like a lot of little details that we have to fix stuff up for before we actually would simulate multiple returns. So that puts it in the list of like, think about doing this later when there's less pressing issues to solve. Definitely on our radar, but I would not promise it at the moment.
Okay. And then the other and half of the question coming from the video where he mentions that a lot of the danger of the T-72 detonating when its ammo gets hit is actually not from the carousel itself, but from the loose ammunition. So is there any plans to, and that often they might carry less ammo than technically they have capacity for, is there any plans to do like a kind of War Thunder style, like limit how much ammo you take, and then I guess in the T-72's case actually set up the auto loader in a specific way,
We're like aware
every
of
other shell or
We know that this is a thing that, I mean, obviously we spend enough time shooting at these. We understand that usually you take a hit in the spare ammo. That's just kind of loose, and that's what sets it off. The carousel has actually got a pretty nice armored shield over it and all that. So this, the problem with this is we're not just going to say, oh, it would be neat to let people take less ammo to be more survivable, and then do that. We kind of want to say how much ammo was being used, and we know that current, like present day armies, a lot of times if they crew T-72 variants, they'll take less ammo, or they'll just do the carousel because the loose ammo is a risk. But we don't know that East Germany did that in the 80s.
Right.
If someone can document to us that the crews were that they had this mindset of taking less ammo, even though they were trying to stock up for a shooting war, then we would consider it. At the moment, we have no reason to believe that, and so we've given them the full a carousel load plus backup, and they're mm-hmm. stuffed full of ammo as designed. So I don't know.
I see. All right, cool. That answers my question. Thank you.
Yep. Nico, what's going on?
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Okay, so my first question is more to related to how the AI works with the tanks. And also because you said a while back that you wanted to fix the issue where the tanks don't look forward when assaulting a position.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's more about curiosity. Like, do you, like, is there a reason why they do that? Because you explained briefly last time the behavior of the AI and how they have like a spotting mechanic, and if they see you for this long, they look at you and all that. And yeah, I was just wondering why they look away.
Yeah, so they look away because of a really unfortunate combination of things. One is that the old AI, or the current AI system, I guess I should say, because we haven't finished vetting the new one. The current AI system, the scanning routine, where they look around, sweep back and forth, that is built into the AI cycle in kind of an awkward way. It was a very early design that we just kind of ran with because we didn't have time to revise it. The consequence of that is they'll only update that so many times. In fact, you can see there's like a stutter to it if there's a lot of vehicles. You'll notice the scanning is like kind of choppy, even if the game's running smoothly. And then they also, if they get interrupted in that scanning, they don't properly remember what they were doing when they go back to it. And sometimes they will they'll pick the wrong direction to turn to resume that sweep. So if they are looking to the left and they say, okay, now I want to look to the right, they might remember the leftward turn command at the same time, and they will turn all the way around over their back deck and then all the way over to the front right again. And if you catch them while that glitch is happening and you look at them, you'll see them driving along with their gun pointed to the rear. And you'll say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why are they doing that? Like, it's because they had that scanning sequence improperly interrupted and then resumed. That's just a straight up glitch that we haven't had time to revise because we were working on a bunch of other stuff, including AI changes that make it obsolete. So one of the things that we're still testing and about to implement is in this new AI pass, fixed the way that scanning works, the actual movement of it. Its speed is being separated out from the AI tick cycles, and it's not gonna do that reverse aiming thing anymore. So I hope that is somewhat insightful into the way that is set up and why it happens.
Yeah. For a second, I thought it was related to stabilizer and how it worked, but actually it's totally different, so.
Yeah, completely. The AI actually shortcuts a lot of the fire control stuff. Like, they don't use the lead systems or anything like that directly. If you ever played the public demo of GHPC back when it was on itch, and you mm-hmm. played a vehicle that was locked for Patreon only, you could sometimes see, like if you stuck with it and just watched it drive and looked through the gun sight, you could see that they do hold over for their aiming. They don't update the gun sight reticles to, you know, point at the target. They don't use dynamic lead. If it was an Abrams, it would just aim over and up to hit a moving target. It's very kind of hard-coded Kentucky windage estimation kind of gunnery, because we don't need to update all the systems for every vehicle, just the one that the player is using, because the AI just need to be able to shoot generally at the target, right? So there's a lot of interesting stuff happening under the hood. It produces the same result, but every once in a while it breaks in a funny way, and that includes things like having vehicles turn their turrets around to the back.
Okay. If I can ask a second question to something that will come down the line, it would be about infantry and buildings. will it work more like how we see it in terms of simulation of damages? Would it be a bit more like what we see in games like Wargame and Warno and all that? Or would we have some form of simulation of where the infantry would be in the building? So, or is it still up in the air?
That is not completely decided. We're thinking about it multiple ways, including trying to figure out exactly how much of the building interior we're going to show. Like, how are you going to see that there's somebody, you know, in the window with an RPG or whatever? I mean, generally buildings need a new model pass regardless of infantry, because we have some ideas for showing impact damage on them and degrading them visibly over time when they're getting hit. But we also need to make sure that infantry garrisoning actually makes sense. So you don't just have a magical, oh, you drove past the bad window and a rocket spawned out of it. Like, that's not fair. So there's several things that we're still working out for that. I'm not actually sure. I don't think it's going to be a matter of you shoot at the building and it just rolls some dice to see if you hit a person. That's a little bit too loose for my tastes. Mm-hmm. I think we would probably have specific locations, but I can't guarantee that until we actually try that and see if it works right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right, we have Sebek back on.
Hello again.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. First question. So you mentioned you're going to be modeling the first last return with your rangefinders on the tank. Do you considering as well to look into the ATGMs as a loss of tracking due to the vegetation or snapped wire?
Wire snapping is difficult. It's not impossible to do, but there's a lot of work that would need to go into that. Because then you have to model the wire properly with wire sag and collision detection along the length, and I don't know, it's the same kind of answer as the laser returns, where we're aware that it could be done. We might want to do it eventually, but it's difficult to do and we don't have time right now. And this is probably worse than the laser return one. The laser return one we could do without too many changes. No guarantee still, but it would at least not be that hard. The wire one is... it would be a pain in the ass. Like, there's no way around it. And so for things like that, we end up thinking, what would we get out of this? If we commit to this effort, if we try to actually accomplish this, what are we going to gain? And I don't think the small difference in ATGM behavior is worth that effort. Maybe that would change in the future, but my guess right now is we're not going to have wire snapping or wire like conductive interference from resting on surfaces, that kind of stuff. I don't think it's going to happen.
Alrighty. And the second question is, do you not missing some opportunities by not kind of running official Facebook channel for the game and etc.? So many retired tankers on the forums, so you may actually get quite of a free advertising there.
Social media is difficult to judge like that. Sometimes, I mean, you can suspect there's all kinds of opportunity, but when it comes down to it, we have to put a lot of time into something like that, and it's not necessarily going to give us more exposure. It might just provide another place that we have to monitor, and people will come and make interesting comments, and I don't know, like Facebook, I'm not sure if Facebook is all that it used to be as far as reach and utility for people that are trying to spread awareness of something, a project. I could be wrong. Maybe in the future, if we have a dedicated social media person, we can set something up and see how it goes. But right now, it's not a priority for us.
Yeah, it's a very much a balancing act to determine what communities the devs can really put their focus on. Like, we have obviously put together this place in Discord where we do the majority, I would say, of our communication. We have a blog, so we have more of a web presence that way too for development. But as far as that goes, we have only so much time, and there's a very particular point where it's diminishing returns to let me look on all of these social media aspects without, like what Josh said, having dedicated person to actually do that.
No, I understand. They only have 12 hours or 24 sometimes if you're working hard.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Sydney Flap.
Hello again.
Hey.
So on the topic of laser range finding and stuff, does the laser range finder in the Abrams actually calculate lead based on the last 1.5 seconds of movement, or is it just as soon as you laze, whatever it hits, it gets the speed of the thing and then calculates the ballistics based on that?
It's kind of neither. The Abrams actually shows you what it's thinking at all times because the reticle is kind of live updating. So the M60, it keeps a running log of 1.5 seconds and averages it when you do the laze. And then it just parks there, wherever that landed. The Abrams is always measuring your traverse speed. It has a very short length of time that it's averaging over, like a fraction of a second. It's not truly instant. You'd get like instability, but it's very close. So it's like, I don't know, 0.2 second, 0.1 second, something like that. It's very smooth, and if you change speed, it almost instantly updates where the reticle is. And when you're tracking a moving target, something about the way you worded that made me think you were saying that it's measuring the speed of the target, but it's definitely not. It's only measuring the speed of your aim changing, because it's not able to sense whether a target's moving or not. It only measures distance. So what's happening is you are telling it to do a new distance measurement, and then it's calculating that distance into the time of flight system, like the ballistic computer. And that time of flight and the speed that you're moving the turret tells it how far ahead it would need to aim, because that's how far your turret will move in the time it takes for the round to reach the target. It's doing a very kind of blind estimation, just trusting that you are tracking the target smoothly and that your range is correct. The M60 does that by averaging over a longer time and then doing it once, moving it once. The Abrams does it by constantly moving, and if you change your speed of traverse, it will change the estimation.
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought it would work like that. Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. To expand on that a little bit, because it's very cool and I feel like it, the tanks don't know anything. So they can't tell if you're looking at a target. They can't tell if you're looking at a moving target. Very modern systems can sometimes do things with image recognition where, like, you can lock onto a hotspot in the thermals and they'll track it. But most tank fire control systems are just, like, they're measuring themselves, or they're measuring the tank itself that you're in. They're not able to see anything. So when you are tracking a moving target in the Abrams and then you laze and the reticle shifts, that's all like self-referencing. That's all trusting that you're moving the gun at the right speed and that whatever's going on out there in the world is matching the input that you're feeding in. That's why you need a steady hand and you need to track the center of the target at the proper speed before you laze. It's not like the tank is being picky or something. It only knows what you're telling it. It can't see the target. It can't see the world. It has no way to know whether you're doing a good job or not.
Yeah, I know what I know based off of myself. I can't take in any of the any additional information until you, the user, have provided it.
Yeah.
Is that just way... a...
Go ahead.
Good. I was just going to ask, is that a issue just with tanks, you know, these particular tanks that we're developing versus more modern sorts of implementations, well, or is that...
Yes and no. Even modern ones, so like I said, the way that they get around this is they would sometimes have image recognition or or like hotspot tracking in the thermals.
Yeah.
And then you can actually lock onto something, kind of like a surveillance camera will be able to track, oh, there's a person going across the frame and put a little box on them. That capability is fairly new for tanks. That has not made its way onto the Abrams, as far as I know. I think that's all still like manual. The gunner does it by hand, and then the system adjusts. But like something like the Merkava or the T-72B3, they have auto tracking now with the thermals. But that's a very new development. Everything else, and especially stuff in the 80s when we're currently depicting in the game, that's all self-measuring within the tank. For example, the Delta D on the T-72, it doesn't know that you've gone closer to the target. It doesn't have like a GPS or something. It's just measuring the wheel speed and where your turret's turned, and it's inferring, it's solving like, okay, you must be going this much closer to the target if you're at this angle.
Yeah.
Or the point tracking in the M60. The M60 can't see a point on the ground and watch it. That would be crazy. It's actually just measuring your driving and your turret's turned at this angle. That means you're going to get this much parallax, assuming your range is correct. So I'm going to turn the gun this much.
Yeah,
it's all self-referential.
That's really surprising to hear, considering the boom of like microcomputers and technology we've had in the last, even just the last decade.
Oh, that the Abrams would not have that yet?
Or that more of those older systems wouldn't take advantage of that, or try to take advantage or retrofit those kinds of things in.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing, because even if it works, which is not always guaranteed, you then have to trust it. So the U.S., for whatever reason, they've taken the opposite approach to many other countries. Like the Russians, as soon as this was available, they put it on their systems. Like the Sosna-U fire control system on the T-72B3, it can automatically track targets if they're a thermal hotspot. Or something like the Javelin, right? The Javelin will lock onto a hotspot and then you can fire and forget. The Abrams, they've spent so much time hammering home this kind of manual approach where the gunner is completely in charge, and if you keep the dot on the target, you're going to hit. That works well enough for us that I guess nobody felt the need to shake it up. And
it works. Don't break it. You know.
Ultimately, the gunner's hand is in charge, even on the newest Abrams, and that's remained unchanged since the 80s.
Wow.
Somebody is saying that the Merkava FCS doesn't actually need the thermals for tracking. That's cool. Image recognition stuff is very neat, and I can definitely see the utility for tank gunnery.
Nice.
It looks like we have another question. Sydney Flap.
This is your last question.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
So that brought up another interesting question. Did you guys have to bore sight the tanks, or is the sight just on the barrel, or is it actually like in the doghouse of the Abrams and you had to bore sight it to 1200 meters?
Well, there's a few things going on with it. One is that when it's in the doghouse, it's got a kind of script routine that it does that tells it where to point. So it syncs it up with the gun and with the fire control system offsets, like lead and cant correction. So that works as it does in real life. But sometimes there's weird stuff, like the T-72 has a system where the gun sight is in the doghouse, but it only follows the gun barrel direction, and it's not, like, there's no lead or anything on the T-72, right? So the easiest way to set that up is to just have the camera attached to the gun, but located at the doghouse. And that's kind of a shortcut, so you need less manipulation of it by the code and less calculation, but it achieves the same result. No one can tell where the camera is when they're looking through it, except for like the general, you know, oh, I'm clearly offset from the gun, I have parallax, but like if that looks correct, then it looks correct. There's some downsides, of course, which is that if you have some kind of complex behavior to simulate that you didn't anticipate, having the gun sight attached in the wrong place will come back to bite you. So when we're doing these revisions of how fire control system code works, I'll probably go back and make sure that all the sights are actually anchored to the correct thing so that we can guarantee that you know, no weirdness happens. There's a lot of tricks that go on. Some of the stuff works exactly how it does in real life, and some of it is just whatever it takes to make it appear correct. That's just game development, though. There's everything in a game is fake, and how fake it is doesn't really matter as long as people see the right outcome.
Cool. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. What do you mean we're not simulating every vault and tiny little movement?
Yeah, it's actually... you know, don't tell anybody, but if you go inside the buildings in the game, there's actually no people living in them. There's actually no furniture or anything.
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah, they're completely empty.
Jesus.
I know.
I didn't know you'd trick me for this long.
If you can't trust, like, homes, what can you trust?
The Zenbot. You're up.
Hi, I got one more question, mostly because I spent an hour trying to do it and I couldn't. Where's the cheese?
The cheese. You can summon the cheese by shooting orange targets on the Proving Ground.
Yep. Right, okay.
Not in Graf, in the actual older Proving Ground map.
I would recommend you don't shoot the target closer to the back as the last one. Make sure you're shooting at the range as one of the last ones.
Oh, like don't shoot the road target as the last one. Yeah.
That's yeah, true. Yeah.
Right,
you,
okay.
You want to be in a good position overlooking the firing range when you summon the final encounter.
Okay. All right, then.
Yep.
Good luck to you.
Also, the cheese isn't real. What the heck are they talking about?
No, what everyone keeps bringing up is this weird-ass rock.
Yeah, there's a funny rock. Grounds. And people got confused. They start talking about Bob Semple. They start talking about cheese. Someone said the cheese wants to kill you, which is like, what kind of unhinged...
I mean, you eat enough of it, maybe, but...
Yeah.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I don't know why they would think that there's some kind of like cheese boss in this tank game. It's really strange.
Very strange. Oh, they're asking for a leak. I did say after 58 minutes that I would post something. I don't actually have one. So
ooh, bluff. Bluff called. What do I have?
Don't you guys know that Josh has called me the unreliable narrator, like personified?
You are the unreliable narrator.
Y'all gotta be careful about that.
What do I have that I haven't shown that I can show? There's a lot of stuff that I could show. I'm just... If we show stuff too deep in development too early, people start expecting stuff that's not happening.
Right. Well, what's one of the more recent things you've shown to CAS that you could show off?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Like a CAS exclusive and show it to everybody. Let me check real quick.
We haven't been the best about our streaming efforts for our cast patrons, but when we do, we definitely get to show off a lot more of our direct development efforts. And also, I know that Josh has been pretty good about showing off some teases to that channel.
Oh, there's I think there's some aircraft stuff that hasn't been shown to all patrons yet.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah.
Let's see. Let's drop something in voice chat. I have to remember which pictures I showed.
I wonder how many people download this after the fact and then are just like, well, what are they talking about? What image was dropped in
voice
chat?
I attach them on the Patreon posts.
Kudos. That's good thinking.
Yeah, because I don't want it to be like you have to have Discord to get the benefit.
Yeah. All right.
Although
that's awesome.
You will have a much easier time seeing stuff if you're on Discord. So for anyone who's listening on Patreon after the fact, you'll get most of the stuff, but you will not get it as quickly or efficiently as the Discord. Okay, let's try this. This Cass and I think MBT have already seen this, but for whoever else, there you go. There's some stuff that we're working on.
People who aren't in the Discord or are just listening to this for the first time, it's planes.
It is planes.
And now the chat goes crazy. That's good. It's just after 2 o'clock. Probably do one more question. And that's going to be Nico. What's up, Nico?
Hey, I'm back. That's not a question. That's a suggestion. If you want cheese that tries to kill you, you should try Corsican cheese. Sorry to all the Corsicans in here, but yeah.
Of course, I've never heard of this before.
It's cheese with maggots in it.
Okay. Fun. Idiot. I give it a shot.
That's absolutely disgusting when you see it, but hey.
What's worse, cheese with maggots or blue cheese?
Cheese with maggots, definitely.
All right, this has gone on long enough. Thank you for your suggestion.
Yeah, appreciate it, Nico.
All right, that was the Patreon Q&A for November. For anybody who's listening to this recording, I hope you enjoyed that talk about maggots to justify your monthly subscription. We'll have another one of these every month, as we do. The next one will be after a dev stream. Dev streams are every 2 months. Q&A is every month. Yeah, most of you know the drill.
Yeah, if you're here, you probably know the drill. If you're new, hey, thanks for joining.
Yep. Alrighty, that's gonna be a wrap. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, all.